This week in Retronauts, the paddling of the Golden Axe with paddles. Hello, I'm Stuart Gipp, and you're listening to Retronauts about Golden Axe, and that was an extremely funny Simpsons reference. Did it make any sense? No, it didn't. But don't think about it. Let's just move on. Let's just scroll to the right. You see what I did there? Another reference to, the first reference to Golden Axe, except for me mentioning the name Golden Axe, which is so perfunctory that it shouldn't even be considered a reference. I hope we don't get any complaints about that. Hello, once again, I'm Stuart Gipp. Who's with me today? Let's have a look. It's a fighting sort of game, and you can't have a fighting game without fights. So, hello.
Hello, everyone. This is Diamond Fight, and what's the deal with Axe Battler? He doesn't battle with an axe.
Yeah, that's great. Everyone loves Jerry Seinfeld right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He's really popular.
You know, it's always a good idea to reference popular comedian Jerry. I'm sorry. I'm getting a note here. No, we're not going to do that again. All right, understood. Okay, anyway, well, I'm here.
Yeah, that was an alarmingly good Seinfeld, I thought.
I am a New York Jew, so, you know.
Well, there we go. Let me try and do another relevant thing now. The character Axe Battler is a man, and we also have John Lennon man, who is the word man in there. So that's the best you're going to get, John.
Oh, that's better than what I've got. I mean, I was going to say something along the lines of, I have my belt, I've taken it off, and I'm ready to scroll, something like that. But
that's not bad, yeah.
You know.
By all means, use that. It's a hilarious joke. It's just, my little intros are just this new thing I'm trying out, you know.
It works, it works.
Okay, let me think. Thomas, how can I do one for Thomas? Nick.
Tank Nick engines?
I got it. Nick is British slang for steel, and the little elves steal your magic. Ooh. In the bonus levels, and we have Thomas Nickel with us. Hello.
Hello. Now, that is one fancy introduction.
Thank you.
So, and what I will do now, I will just open a nice bottle of Henninger beer, which is a big inspiration for this game.
Hmm. I find that beer is a big inspiration for many of my best ideas. For example,
yeah, but
falling down.
In this case, it's literal.
Yeah.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But today we're talking about the excellent and wonderful Sega series Golden Axe and what I would deem to be a reasonably overdue focus, maybe, on this series.
Stuart, what you just said, the game is excellent. Isn't that a nice start?
It is excellent, isn't it?
It is excellent indeed.
Yeah, it's solid gold.
No questions asked.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, man. This whole episode is just going to be puns, but I love it. And we all know Golden Axe because it's one of Sega's most ported, most compiled games ever, but I always feel like it's held a little bit of a second string Sega feel to it, not the game itself, but to its reception. Like, people will go, oh yeah, now Golden Axe, I like that, and then they'll never play it ever, you know. But they're wrong not to play it, and I think we should discuss why that is. In the same order that I introduced, I'd like to find out what your sort of burgeoning initial thoughts about Golden Axe are. Diamond, what about you?
Well, I encountered it as an arcade game, and we're recording this in 2024, so it's about perfectly 35 years ago, Golden Axe release. And I was super into it. Obviously, at that point, you know, beat-em-ups were pretty hot, and this is essentially a beat-em-up with weapons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't super into, like, the whole Conan Barbarian stuff, but I was like, okay, it looks cool, it sounds cool, and I definitely played it at arcades whenever I found it, and then I'm pretty sure at the end of 1989, that's when I sold my Nintendo to get a Sega Genesis in the US, and I know for sure, as soon as I got my Genesis, I bought the Golden Axe port of, you know, for the home port,
yeah,
which was very satisfying because it let me play a lot of Golden Axe around my house, and boy, did I play a lot of Golden Axe. And so did, just like I also played a lot of Altered Beasts and Ghouls and Ghosts, and like all three of my initial Genesis purchases were arcade ports, and I loved them, and I put many hours into them.
Very solid initial trio there, I have to say.
Yes.
Well done. Well chosen.
What a start for Mega Drive. Amazing.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my first Mega Drive game was like Bubsy or something, so I don't know. Maybe that's why I'm like this. Who knows? John, what about you? What's your experience with the old Golden Axe there?
I, like Diamond, I also experienced this first in the arcade during the boom of the belt scroller. You know, the final fight was big. This was around, I remember playing this at a mini golf place, General Custard's or something, that had one of
these
machines.
That's a very unfortunately named mini golf
place. Yeah, it is in retrospect, but they did at least make up for it with a Golden Axe machine, and Turtles was there as well. And yeah, I remember playing it there, but then not actually seeing it again until I played the Genesis version. Although I think... No, I guess it would have been... So I'm kind of... My cousin also was like the only person I ever met in the U.S. that had an Amiga computer. And I remember he had a version of Golden Axe on the Amiga that I remember thinking was neat, but not great. And this was before I was into like frame rates and stuff, but I was already like, this doesn't look smooth, is the feeling I got, right? So when I also played it on Genesis, it kind of like cemented in my mind that, oh yeah, the Genesis is the better machine here compared to this Amiga thing.
So that's what Amiga don't.
Exactly. So
I think your cousin was actually also, and remains to this day, the only person ever to own an Amiga in the United States.
Dude, it was so weird. Like, it was an unusual thing to see an Amiga over there for sure.
Fans are gonna come for me for that one.
But weirdly enough, though, I also have to mention that I did actually have a very brief experience with Golden Axe 3 in the U.S. because one of my friends, Chris, who basically had everything, including like a 3DO, they subscribed to the Sega Channel. And I remember Golden Axe 3 appearing on the Sega Channel and being like, wait, there's a Golden Axe 3? And being completely baffled by this. And I didn't actually seriously play that one until much later. And I eventually got the cartridge version of that. But that always stuck out with me as well. Because, like, yeah, this was an early example of, like, quote-unquote digital distribution affecting the availability of a game.
I feel like early digital distribution has to be a subject for an episode at some point. Sega Indeed. Channel and Satellaview and stuff like that. Yep. We've got to do it. But, Thomas, what about you? What's your Golden Axe potted history?
Yeah, I guess I'm the odd man out here, because where I come from, arcades are not a thing at all, haven't been. And so my first encounter was the IBM DOS port of Golden Axe, which is interesting because it looks the part, but of course it plays quite a bit different, and it had just always this flair of the forbidden, because, as you know, Germany, we have some rather strict laws. Golden Axe was banned around here, so...
Blimey.
Yeah, it was...
What do you have instead of arcades, though? Like, what? There must be something.
Spielhallers, right?
It was... Yeah, no, the thing is, German law basically equates arcade machines with all these games of chance, you know?
Gambling.
Gambling, exactly. So
if you have
a place that has arcade games, they also have the gambling machines and all the people pulling the levers and pushing the buttons and chain smoking. All very unpleasant. You don't want to go there.
Yeah, I mean, UK arcades, you're just pretty much the same, to be honest, but we just didn't care. We don't care about anything over here.
Right.
Yeah. That's why we have no history of banning things.
Yeah, see what it got you. But yeah, Golden Axe, as I said, it's the forbidden fruit in a way. And a bit later on, I bought the Mega Drive port, one of the first games I got from Japan as an import. And man, that was the real thing, finally. That was something else.
I initially encountered this game when I was a small child. There used to be this kind of air quotes youth club, which I hate saying, it's such a weird term, but it was just like a place where kids would go and hang out, and you could buy like Tuck, and you could play on. They had usually like an arcade machine. In this case, it was Blood Warrior of all things, and they had a Mega Drive hooked up with the television up sort of on the ceiling, so you had to crane your neck back to look at it while you were playing. So you'd be gazing up with your mouth agape, looking like a complete idiot. But that's how I first played Golden Axe. I remember thinking, like, I didn't know about the arcade game, but you just have a vibe. You're just like, this was definitely an arcade game. You can just tell, even if you have no cognizance of the arcade whatsoever. And, I used to run up against this game quite a lot because of the choices available. It was probably the best one that wasn't Sonic 1. And I thought it was great fun. I loved the music. The music is etched into my brain. It's one of my earliest Mega Drive experiences, and so formative that, yeah, I'm not sure I've ever beaten it legitimately, but I must have. I must have. It's not that hard. I must have done it at some point. I just wish that the health bar was a little bit easier to pass, that's all, you know? I don't know how much health I've got at any given time, really. enough of this. We should just jump straight in. In the notes, it has been written by someone, a miscreant. No doubt that Altered Beast might be mentioned as a lead up to Golden Axe, and that means we have to mention Altered Beast again. And reminding people of this is just, I'm just against it, but I guess we have to now. So, what is the relevance that Altered Beast has to Golden Axe, other than that it has that one fella in it that's in both games?
Chicken Stinger.
Chicken Stinger.
Yes, that's the official name of that creature, the Chicken Stinger.
You know, there's a place near my house that does hot wings that's called that.
It sounds delicious. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, but the thing is, yep, of course, both games have this one creature in it, this little squat pink thing with the beak and the long tail. But it's also made by the same guy. It's both produced by a man called Makoto Uchida.
Oh, wow.
Who was, back then, Sega's, obviously, guy for some sort of brawny barbarian actions with lots of muscles and all that stuff.
I got to be honest with you. I give Altered Beast a hard time, but I do have massive nostalgia for it, and actually do kind of like it. Really, I'm just doing a bit. It's a funny bit.
Oh, absolutely. That was the game that I almost certainly played before Golden Axe, and it was a game that me and my friends talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. So I feel like when Golden Axe came out, I'm sure even as a kid I saw similarities. I definitely recognized the creature in being both, but it's like it was definitely like, oh, it's another Sega game. Yeah, Sega makes cool games, you know. And like I said, when I got my Genesis, it was absolutely, you know, in America, at least, I don't know if every territory, but in America, Altered Beast was just in the box. So I got that one automatically.
Yeah, same here. Exactly. Same here.
Packing, yeah. Mm. I mean, Altered Beast, I mean, they both have fantastically detailed creature designs in there as well. I mean, Altered Beast has some all-timers, like that first boss, come on, it's so cool.
Yeah, they're both just so wonderfully chunky, I think, both games.
Yeah, agreed. And also, it has that voiceover that says, "Rise from your grave," which I will now do an impression. No, I'm not going to do that. Not this time.
No, don't.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
It is interesting, though. I have to wonder if Golden Axe being a pack-in instead of Altered Beast, I guess the timing wouldn't have worked, but I feel like that would have been even more of a success.
I have to agree, to be honest. I think it was Altered Beast, and then it was, I want to say, Sonic.
I like Altered Beast. I think it's a good game, but I do think Golden Axe is significantly better, and it's also more of a co-op two-player kind of experience.
I mean, one of the most commonly seen cartridges, I would say, in the UK is the Mega Games 2 compilation, which does have Golden Axe on,
right.
Which must have given it even more of an audience, obviously. I think it's that, Revenge of Shinobi, and Streets of Rage. I could be wrong about that. But it's a hell of a package.
One thing I want to note, though, before we continue, is Uchida-san, that Thomas you mentioned, he still works for Sega today.
Yep.
So he's still involved in modern Sega games. And there's a few old school Sega guys that are still there. They just never left. I guess similar to Nintendo in a sense, but I think that's really cool, actually.
There is a new Golden Axe coming, isn't there? They've announced it. Yes, I believe it's happening.
That's right. They're reviving several classic games. Well,
yeah,
I'm very curious to see how that turns out.
Streets of Rage, Revenge, or something. There's that Shinobi game that hasn't been announced to be being made by Lizard Cube, but clearly is.
It is. Jet Set Radio.
Yeah, and Jet Set Radio. Yeah, yeah.
Crazy Taxi as well.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Maybe they'll make a new Sonic.
Oh, boy.
You think? Maybe?
Yeah.
Man, that would be something.
That would be something.
I miss that guy. Where is he? It's been months since his last game. but, yeah, no, let's get into the weeds with the initial Golden Axe, which was January 1989. Let's talk about the arcade version and then move on to the ports.
Well, really, you know. Stu, I think the first thing to note is it's kind of important to keep this specific period of time in mind, because this was post Double Dragon, right?
Yeah.
But it was right around 1989 when all these other developers came out with their own takes on that sort of formula. And the formula actually predates Double Dragon. It goes back to, I guess, Spartan X and the like. So Irem had a hand in this, but the idea essentially is you control a man or woman or whatever creature you might play as in any of these games, and you walk around a field that's angled towards the camera so that you kind of walk in and out of the screen. You're fighting dudes before you reach the boss, and you go do it again on each stage. And it was a huge deal in the arcades. Capcom especially hit it big with Final Fight, and Konami as well got into it, though they got off to a slower start with some of their early stuff, like the Crime Fighters games. But
just for sort of clarity, Spartan X, that's Kung Fu Master, right?
Yep.
I believe, yeah. Yep.
If you said that, I apologize. I missed it. I really do apologize.
I did not say that, but yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we should probably shout out a friend of the show, Brian Clark, has been doing some videos on YouTube lately, just going through, you know, landmark belt scroller action games, like one by one. And he's talked about, you know, he talked about Spartan X Kung Fu Master. He talked about Trojan. He talked about the Master System Hokuto no Ken Fist of the North Star game. So he's been going through these games one at a time. He's here. I talked about Renegade. So I'm sure he'll get the Golden Axe, you know, when he gets to it. But yeah, 1989 in general was a pretty big year for the genre, because by this point, yeah, you've got a lot of takes on it. I want to say, if memory serves me, Final Fight is like the end of 1989, but really throughout, but throughout 1989, you've got so many different versions of two or three or even four, especially Konami. By this point, Konami's got the Turtles game, which is four player. So it's like, you've got a lot of different versions of this thing. Like just the goal being get as many players as you can at once. Get them all in there and get them pumping quarters in the machine so they keep going, and you just throw enemies at them. And, you know, I think in the years that would come, a lot of them would turn into like sort of licensed properties and you know, oh, it's a bunch of popular characters that we borrowed from someone else. But in this case, Golden Axe is like, well, they are our own original characters, quote unquote original, but really they're just sort of archetypes that we borrowed and some sound effects that we deliberately borrowed from some hit movies. And don't sue us, please.
And unfortunately, this is a genre that was kind of a flash in the pan. It really only was popular for about 3 years, I would say. Yeah. Like, it did have a bit of a tail, but really it was 1989 through like 1992 where it was huge, right? Street Fighter II basically came and wiped it out, and we saw a lot fewer of these made.
It's a shame because, like, some really good Capcom ones, like, you know, Battle Circuit Cadillacs and Dinosaurs,
stuff.
Alien vs. Predator must have been a little bit lost in the shuffle in that respect.
Yeah, I think they're beloved, but it just didn't have the same impact as these early games. Yeah. In 1989,
They are all on the beat 'em up bundle. You should play that. It's really good.
Oh, yeah, that is good. But Golden Axe, though, was the one that kind of stood out a little bit, because outside of the licensed stuff like Turtles, a lot of these were kind of focused on that sort of 80s-ish movie-style genre, you know, where it's like kind of the city streets. It's hard.
Streets
it's
and edgy, punks and all that stuff.
And there's punks on the streets. You got to clean them up.
Yeah.
Where Golden Axe is like, well, yeah, it's just, you know, it's Arnold all waxed up and ready to go.
The thing is, the game has three major influences from what the developer said. There is, of course, Conan. You can't deny that, because look at the game. Listen to the soundtrack. It looks the part. It sounds the part. Axe Battler basically is Conan. Tyrus is Red Sonja. So you have all that Conan connect, of course. The movie was a big thing in the cinemas, and rightly so. And then, of course, there's Dragon Quest that came out. And from what he said is, from what Uchida said, he wanted to go a bit into the Dragon Quest direction for his next big arcade game. But the higher ups at Sega always told him to dial it back a bit more. So all that stayed from Dragon Quest is a sort of a magic system. But that's it, basically. And the third pillar for Golden Axe is also what I found out, the first Street Fighter game, because you have some sort of rudimentary special moves in this game that go a little bit above what you have in Final Fight, where you just press two buttons to make a special that costs you energy.
Yes, we should probably talk about what those sort of your basic moves are in the game. Not that, I mean, I'm sure people know, but it's always worth refreshing them. I mean, your three different characters, Axe Battler, Tyrus Flair, Gilius Thunderhead, who's the little green dwarf fellow, who's just fantastic, isn't he? Isn't he great? As mentioned, Axe Battler, as mentioned by Jerry Seinfeld at the top of the episode, Axe Battler does not, in fact, battle with an axe.
But he does battle guys wielding an axe. Here we
he
go.
He does.
Yes.
So both Tyrus and Axe battle. I don't like to say calling him Axe. Both Tyrus and Axe use just swords, like a sort of broadsword, longsword, that sort of thing. And Gilius uses, well, he uses an axe. But he spends quite a lot of the time bonking people on the head with the sort of hilt of the axe, doesn't he? It's a bit violent,
best,
really.
Best thing ever, I think.
It is
basic
great.
Gold axe combo. Just slash, slash, couple of knocks, and then you kick him away, and it just feels great every time.
Yeah, this must be a pioneering game for the whole double tap to run thing, to speed yourself up, to
probably,
get yourself into like a shoulder barge. Or like a...
Yeah, that's the next very important move. Very important for the whole game design. Because
I pretty much
very...
use it constantly, to be honest. So,
it's for perfect for crowd control, because it pushes the enemy back all the time.
Yeah, and gets you away from them as well, using quickness. But every character's got magic, we've mentioned, and the magic, the way that works, my understanding is that it sort of goes in tiers, and that the more sort of magic you have, the more powerful your spell is, and slightly different the effects of your spell are going to be, although they're generally just that they'll hurt everyone and knock them over and make them fall on their bum.
That's what it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I like about the magic system is that it really gives the characters sort of distinct features. Because, like, control-wise, they're all basically the same. I mean, Tyrus and X-Battler are almost exactly the same, except one's a dude and one is a woman, you know, and their outfits are different. Mm. But basically, like, they have the same weapon. They're, you know, their animations are very similar. And, you know, the dwarf, of course, looks different. So he's got, you know, and he's using different weapons. So he's a little different. But basically, from an actual, like, melee standpoint, these characters are virtually identical. But with the magic, it really feels different because they all have different sort of levels to their magic. Like, throughout the game, you collect these little potions. And depending on the character, you level up your magic faster. So it's like, do you want to pick a character who has less magic, but they get, like, to their max faster, so they'll be using their magic more often? Or do you want to use Tyrus Flare like me and be a cool person, because at her max power, a literal dragon appears on the screen and just breathes fire on everybody. And it's the best sound, and it's the best looking thing in the game, and it's super, super cool. And, like, do you want to be that cool, or do you want to settle for just, like, a little flash of lightning, is the question.
That's cool, because there is a bit of strategy there in terms of, like, biding your time. Do you want to wait, or do you just want to use it?
Yeah.
But when you guys lay all that out, it is pretty interesting how, for 1989, this game is pretty advanced, because at the time, most beat-em-ups were still kind of you have a jump button, and you have an attack button, right? Yeah. And this, you know, obviously is a 3-button game, but beyond that, it also kind of has a rudimentary grappling system where you kind of get in for your combo and you can kind of throw enemies as well.
Yeah.
So you always have this kind of thing where you're going in, you can do some attacks, some combos, you reach up, you throw them, then you can dash to the other side of the screen, hit them that way, and then maybe unleash your magic. And it kind of allows you to dart back and forth around the arena and really control the crowd in a way that's not really possible in other brawlers from that era. Like, I love the Turtles game, for instance. It's a cool theme, but it's very, very simplistic. Konami's Brawlers would get better, but that one is just, it's all flash. It really is just kind of mashing the attack button and getting through it, right?
I think it's very... No, I was just going to say, I like the fact that what you end up with is these big, burly characters who feel like they hit hard, but they don't feel leaden. You can get around, you know?
Right, they're quick.
You've got evasive, and that really gives it a really fun sort of feeling of hands, for want of a better sort of term. Sorry, Thomas, what were you saying?
Yeah, just the later level in the game, without crowd control, you don't stand a chance, because enemies will encircle you. I mean, enemies are usually very stupid, but if they get you between them, then you're done for. Then it really, really hurts.
I think this is one of the more fair bolt scrollers that I can think of, because thinking back on it, I have definitely finished this one, and I can't think of many others that I've managed to complete, because without credit feeding, you know, because... Yeah. The amount of evasive action that you've got, and how powerful you actually are, the ability to regain your health and use your magic to crowd control even more if you need to, like, it's a panic button almost.
By the way, I wanna mention two more important moves for the game, because if you press jump and attack at the same time, Tyrus Flayer and X-Battler do this very nice looking swirly attack over the head and hit the enemy behind them, which it feels really good and satisfying. And Gilius has this this rolling move, which gives him a bit of invincibility and really hits hard. So I think
it's
this
so cool.
move
looks
if
so
you know
cool.
what you're doing. It's so overpowered, especially against later bosses. But yeah, that makes it so much fun again.
I think, I mean, given they're all, you know, fueled by vengeance here, because, I mean, the villain Death Adder, sorry, Death is equal to Adder, I think their name is actually technically. What a cool guy Death Adder is. I mean, not in terms of what he did, he's a dick, but, like, what a cool looking guy. Let's lay it out.
We have to cancel Death Adder here on this podcast. Yeah. Death Adder is definitely canceled.
He killed Axe Battler's father. He killed Gilius's brother. But he killed Tyrus Flair's mother and father. What the hell?
Ouch. Like, yeah.
What the heck? I mean, she has. I think she has every right to be pissed about it, to be honest. I mean, especially compared to...
You know
to
what he also did, by the way? He did more stuff than that. He stole the helm from House of Doom from the Conan movie. How about that now?
Yeah.
That is something else.
He also strung the royals up. He just hung them up in the air. That's just rude, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's got the golden axe to boot.
So, yeah, I guess he has it coming for him.
He does, yeah. I mean, he deserves it. Unlike most video game villains, he really does deserve it. But getting
by the way, I have to mention one final move that is just awesome because you mentioned the running, right? So if you run, you jump, and then you press the attack button, you have this wonderful downward step that is very hard to aim but does a ton of damage.
Yeah, and you jump super high as well. It's terrifying. Yeah.
And if you know how to position your enemies, you can kill some bosses really, really nice with that. Because, as I said, enemies are not too smart.
They are not, indeed.
So if you can get them to the bottom of the screen, usually you hit them quite well with your downward step.
So, shall we talk about the enemies a little bit? Because they're kind of the main thing you're going to be brushing up against in this game.
Well, I think before we get to that, we should probably just mention the rideable creatures again, just because that was that essentially expanded your arsenal, right? In addition to all the moves you already have access to, being able to ride like dragons, for instance, changes the game. But you have to balance it because it's easy to get knocked off and lose it again, right? So
you really want to keep these guys for the bosses, because if you have a dragon at a boss fight, then you're set. If not,
which is a huge part of the replayability, I think, because it challenges you to get good at capturing these guys and then holding onto them, and that's tough.
Yeah, and of course, if you sit on a dragon at some point, enemies will try to knock you down.
Yes.
Yeah, because they want to go on the dragon, don't they? Because they're like, you're holding the dragon. So bogart on the dragon.
And it's the old rule. You get knocked down 3 times, dragon is gone.
That's the thing I like about the mounts. The mount system too much to me is the fact that almost always they appear as an enemy. Like, an enemy will come in riding this creature, and your basic move is, I got to knock them off, and then I take it. And then I don't want to lose it, otherwise they'll take it back. And so you have this sort of seesaw battle going back and forth, because thankfully, again, we talk about the enemy AI. The enemy AI, I think, is pretty good as far as, like, positioning and trying to surround you. But, like, in general, they don't use the mounts as smart as well as you can use it. So when you see an enemy appear, like, you have the advantage as far as getting them off it. But then once you have it, if you don't use it well, they'll just get it back. And then you have this sort of back and forth. But I also love the fact that when you have these creatures, you're still very mobile. You can still dash. Mm-hmm. You can still jump. And all three of the creatures have slightly different powers. I would say maybe the strongest one is one that actually shoots a projectile fireball across the screen.
Yeah, that's the red dragon, right?
But the one that sort of, you know, creates a breath of fire like on the ground in front of him, like kind of like Dalsin's like yoga breath, like that's also very strong because like the breath lasts a while. And then you have the Chicken Stinger, which is a very quick tail whip, which is, like, not great range, but it is fast. So all three of them have their uses, and all three of them, you can sort of stun lock. If you get your enemies trapped in the corner, you can just, like, quickly whip and attack them, and they'll never get up, because you'll knock them down as soon as they get up again, so...
And that shows again that the game is really, really lavish, because the Red Dragon appears once in the entire game, and that's it. So they did that creature, they made its animations, they made its moves and everything for it to appear one single time. And that's, I think, I like that about it. They just went for it. I mean, it's the same with the magic again. Everybody has different levels, as we said, right? Tyrus Flay has 6 levels of magic. Every level of magic has a different animation that comes out. So there's a good chance you won't see some of them ever because you save up for the big dragon, of course. But yeah, they put all that stuff in there because they could.
I think detail is a good sort of watchword for the whole game because it's got beautifully detailed visuals.
I mean,
we'll get to the port, but the Mega Drive version, I think, is honestly so impressive looking. Even now, it's so iconic looking.
If we're going to mention that, then I really have to gush about the background work because it does have this.
Oh yeah,
it has a different look than usual. The colors are a lot more, I don't want to say washed out, but they don't go for these bold contrasting pixel colors anymore. It's more like this, like it almost feels like a painting brought to life. And some of the scenes that you'll engage with are extremely creative, such as the one where you're essentially riding on a griffin. So it's got all like the feathers and everything kind of, they're not animated, but it's cool and epic. And the game in the arcade version manages to sort of get rid of that tiled based look that you'd often see in games from that period. You know what I mean? Where you can kind of see the squared off nature of the different pixel art tiles as they're pieced together, where this has more of an organic look with like gnarled trees and roots running through a scene and this like stonework, kind of thrown in there. It looks really good. My only complaint is I think the sprite work is fine, but I don't think it's as good as the background work. And I think it's a step. It's not on par with something like Final Fight from Capcom. I would say they're a little bit smaller. There's fewer animation frames. They don't quite have the same impact compared to that.
And of course, there's fewer guys at all.
Yes, exactly. So. It's a good looking game for its era, especially the backgrounds, but it's not like it wasn't pushing any technical boundaries yet, which is something Sega would begin doing not too far after this, I would say.
For me, one of the things I think about a lot when it comes to beat 'em ups, especially, is how much does this game feel like you're going on a journey? And I think Double Dragon does it very well because even though it is sort of like a generic city background, at least in the arcade version, you're going from place to place, level to level, and you see the characters progress these different parts. And like you see, you never like lose contact with the character. It's always a seamless transition. And this game does break it up a little bit because you have a map screen, but the map screen is a sort of, it looks like an old scroll and like you see like a quill drawing on it and all the levels like have a sort of different feel to them. And the game goes out of its way to explain, oh, now we're in the village and now we're riding this thing and now we're going over here and now we're at the castle. So it really does, even more than something like, say, a Ghouls and Ghosts and a Final Fight, which have that sort of, you know, map screens that show you where you are.
Yeah.
This game in particular really goes out of its way to communicate to you, you know, about a heroic journey, where you're going and where you've been. And I think it really sells the whole experience, which I think some of the later games, I think, fall flat on because they don't get it right. Like this game gets it right.
You can look at it just sort of a microcosm. Even the first stage of the first Golden Axe, when you make your way through the wood to the village that's being under siege, to the end of the village where you face off against like the generals. You know, the two big bald fellas who are just laughing at how rubbish you are until you absolutely batter them, as is their wont. But then after that, of course, you know the stage where you're on the back of like a giant eagle.
And oh, it's an eagle. That feeling of propulsion forwards.
A griffin sort of thing, yeah.
Well, it says eagle in the in-game text.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess you're right. Yes, you're right. You see his face when you walk back onto land, and it is more of a giant eagle. But, Stu, I think one thing to mention, to add on there is, like, so that first stage, obviously, it transitions from sort of day to evening, so you're fighting the bosses at dusk. And then you get the bonus stage, which appears with the little halflings running around, right? Yeah. And I think that also sort of helps tie everything together because it shows your warriors resting. Like in this case, it's at night with a starry sky. They're asleep. And then these guys show up. You take them out and try to steal those bottles back from them. But that also kind of gives the impression of, your warriors need a break. And now it's going to be the next day. And then it shows the map and you're on your journey to the next area.
Yeah,
it
does sort of brings sense it all together. The epic sort of journey that you're going on there. It's very, very cool indeed. Now,
the enemies.
Yes, the enemies. The many enemies that you meet, all of whom are named after delicious adult beverages.
That's the case.
For example, let's have some examples of those delicious beverage enemies.
Sure, of course. The first one you meet is either the Longmole or the Henninger. The Henninger is the bald guy with the mustache and wielding this mace-like weapon. And the Longmole is the guy in the helmet with horns wielding the club. And Henninger is a beer from right around the corner here. So that's what this guy is named after. There's a Henninger Tower right in Frankfurt.
Yeah.
Didn't see any of these guys in there anywhere so far, sadly. Maybe there luckily, should
be,
I don't know.
Enemies called like Pilsner, Raquel, and Hoffmeister and things like that. It would be funny. Little Hoffmeister reference for the old English people listening to this. Yeah. Remember the Hoffmeister bear? Follow the bear, listeners. Follow the bear. No one's going to get that.
I think they renamed these enemies, Thomas, in the U.S. to coffee and tea, just in case.
Did they?
Ah, that's pathetic.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
This isn't a Nintendo game, Thomas.
I completely believed you. It's so believable that they would do that.
Exactly. It feels like very true to those times.
So yeah, but anyway, these two guys are your basically go-to standard enemies. They come in various colors. The green ones are rather weak. The blue the red ones are rather strong. You have them made of copper. They have black ones on the eagle. They're all with slightly different attributes in terms of speed and in terms of how they dish out damage. And I think the third big one are the women wielding the axe, and they are all named after different sorts of vodka.
Oh boy.
So, for example, one of them is named after this Polish vodka that contains one strand of a certain type of grass, buffalo grass, it's called. Great stuff. Yep, these are the three most normal enemies. And
do you have a name for the skeleton?
It's called Skeleton.
Oh.
They didn't come up with anything there. But yeah, I think, can we agree we hate the skeletons?
Yes.
I can't bring myself to hate any skeletons, to be honest. I'm just a big skeleton stan, so whenever they appear, I'm just like, let's go. This game's got good-ass skeletons. I really like them.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they're frustrating to deal with as a player, but I think, like, as video game enemies go, these are, like, some of the coolest skeletons I've ever seen. Like, they're...
Oh, yeah.
They burst out of the ground. They make cool sounds when they come at you. They attack really, really fast, and it's just kind of really intimidating. Like, you actually get scared. That whole part of the game actually is really cool when you first meet the skeletons, because, like, you're already on the eagle, and, like, it turns into nighttime so that it gets dark, and all of a sudden, yeah, the skeletons come bursting out of the ground. You start to see those shadow enemies appear. They sort of, like, just fade in from nothing, and, like, it's like, you're like, it's kind of spooky all of a sudden. This game gets a little, like, you know, oh, geez, where am I going? Where's, you know, what's happening? It, you feel like you're in a more dangerous area.
Yeah.
They give you a bit of a head up because at the end of stage 3 you have your first skeleton coming up, but just coming from off the screen and already, okay, it's a skeleton, what's wrong here? So far you just fought barbarians and dragons and everything. Suddenly you have the skeletons. Things are getting weird now.
Mm.
And of course, afterwards, as fight said, it just ramps up.
That it does.
I think I would have felt very shortchanged without skeletons, to be honest. They've got to be there. Like, you can't have a game like this without including a fight with some skellies. Make no bones about it.
They also have nice shields with a skull on them.
Yeah.
So, of course, means skull, they're the baddies.
Well, I think going to the point that John made, I feel like it is true. There's not a lot of enemy variety in this game because basically there's only a few models and they just keep repeating them and by changing the colors. And it is good that the colors communicate to you, like, threat level. Like, if you see an enemy and then you see it later on again and it's got darker colors, you're like, oh, this one's more dangerous.
Yes. Wait, that's Dragon Quest all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
right.
But
video game language.
There's a pretty small number of enemies you actually fight. I mean, in the case of the home port, though, I think it works to the advantage because the home port then gets to keep all the enemies. I feel like if they put too many enemies in, then maybe the home port would have had to cut some. But in this case, everyone you see in the arcade game, I'm pretty sure, shows up in the home version because they just color them up. It's fine.
I think it makes. I mean, I'm not that you're saying it's a bad thing necessarily. Not that you are saying that, but it makes up for it with its variety and the fact that it's not that long of a game, really.
It's like 15, 20 minutes, basically.
The stages aren't too long either. It doesn't outstay its welcome. So you're constantly getting variation, and you're getting your little rest sequences so you can build yourself back up again. And I think pacing wise, this is one of the best belt scrollers ever made. Especially on the Mega Drive.
I really agree. Yep, it feels really, really great in terms of pacing. And I mean, every time I see a copy of the game somewhere, I have to play it, and I usually also finish it then because it's just a nice, fun 20 to maybe 25 minutes. You had a good time, and Yeah, it's just get the blood pumping, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really good for that. A nice quick romp.
Yep. Also, of course, we have two boss-type enemies. Three of them. We have the guys with the hammer, which I think really iconic, you know? Standing there laughing at you, hammer over the shoulder, and then they attack with kicks and with a hammer strike. They just have this wonderful, fully thump sound. It's great. You love fighting these guys.
I think those guys turned up in that unusual Dreamcast game Sega Gaga as well. They're in that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they are so iconic. They're even in the title screen of the Sega Ages games on the Switch.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's always random what comes up. But yep, they are in there.
So we should talk about Death Adder and the ending of this game.
Yeah, the ending especially.
Before we get into the ports. But the Death Adders, I mean, it's a reasonably standard boss fight. It's not unfair. He's got his wake-up attacks. He does do a lot of damage. And he's got his little flunkies. But
more skeletons.
Yeah. But, you know, they're eminently beatable. And when you do beat him, there is a tremendous act of violence that occurs to his body when his axe at that time goes kind of spiraled into the air and just lands in his chest cavity, which is spectacular. And a very satisfying ending, I think, before the
also
main ending.
Also very bloody.
Yeah, yeah.
In the arcade, at least.
But yeah, tell us about the ending of this game, the arcade version.
Oh, man. So I can do it if you want, because...
No, by all means.
Okay, so essentially, basically, it breaks the fourth wall, which is a fun thing, because it shows, like, a couple kids playing a Golden Axe arcade machine in a Japanese arcade, actually, based on the buildings outside, and all the creatures from the game essentially bust out of the machine and chase them out of the arcade and down the street, which is hilarious.
That's magnificent.
It's so good.
The heroes chase after them, right?
Yep. Yeah. They're in there too. And what's interesting is that it's a total like visual shift from what the game itself normally looks like. And it kind of has that like dark night bluish hue that you would expect from like, say, the yet unreleased Streets of Rage series.
It is very Streets of Rage. I wonder if it is like a little subtle like nod at it sometimes.
Probably not, but like I'd love to think that like somehow they were connected in that way through this ending.
So the ports, because there's a lot of them.
Okay, Stu, I have a list here. I've written down a list.
Yeah.
If I may, because the ports, that is my thing. I love ports. And this is the one Golden Axe game that has a lot of ports. So obviously, chronologically speaking, so the arcade game is 89. We also got a Mega Drive / Genesis version, and then a Master System version. There was also an Amiga version that followed the next year, along with a DOS version Thomas played, an Atari ST version, and then a C64, Amstrad CPC, ZX Spectrum version as well. So a lot of computers there. I think in that same year, we also got the PC Engine CD version, followed by... Then there was the compilation version that appeared on... And I have it. It's the...
Mega CD, right?
Yeah, the Sega Classics Collection for Mega CD.
They added the arcade sounds and new music for that one. Or am I imagining that?
I actually need to double check on the sound.
They changed sounds, but not for the better, I would say.
Right, no, because some of those CD games had different sound and like tweaks made to it, but by and large, they were pretty similar. There was an emulation version of this released on the Dreamcast at some point, but
that
then
one
we
is
have
terrible.
Yeah, it's because it's early emulation, not good. Yeah.
Is that from the Sega Smash Pack? Or
yep. I think so. Yeah. This I think it was Steve Snake emulator, but it was still, which he's done good
Fusion,
work,
right?
But like, yeah, for that era, it was not great, and the sound was horrible.
Yeah.
Then there's the two portable ones that I think are interesting. Of course, it's the Game Boy Advance port, but the one that I think is better is WonderSwan Color.
It's amazing. I looked at that before this because you were telling me about it, and it's incredible. It looks so good.
Yeah, and if you see it running on a real Wonderswan like crystal, with a, even though it's a non-backlit screen, it has a really nice look to it. It's a very sleek looking game with a lot of frames.
That is animation. So bonkers to me because Wonderswan, I believe, is like 99 or 2000. Like that's a 10-year-old arcade game at that point.
Yeah, no, the Wonderswan is nuts. Like the hardware is way, the hardware is not as powerful as GBA, but it's actually pretty close in a lot of ways. So it was more capable than you would have expected for that time. And that version is great looking. But then the following year, we had the Sega 3D Ages version. And this was before M2 and others get involved in this. This was the early days. And this one, it plays perfectly fine. But they tried to remake the visuals in polygon form. And it's
ugly.
It's ugly as heck. It does not look good.
I like the fact that every time you swing your sword and hit someone, there's an explosion, though. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, but it just, it feels stiff and ugly, and it's not a good-looking release. But
it's also much too long, anyway.
Yeah, and it's just
Incidentally, if you want to play that on your PS2, there's a Sega Classics collection that ported a bunch of the old Sega Ages into there. And honestly, I think it's worth having, not to play this, but like, there's some good stuff on there, I think. I remember Alien Syndrome being pretty good on that.
And I can say one good thing about this game, it has really good music.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, can I also mention, though it's very tangential, the PS2 version of Dynamite Decca has a mode where you play as Tyrus Flair and Axe Battler, I believe.
I feel like the PS2 Sega Ages would make a good episode in general, actually.
I think you're right, and I think we should definitely do it. That's two so far.
Put that on the list.
I would love to talk about those, but we'd have to slip that. That would be at least five episodes.
That would be a lot. So, obviously, then Golden Axe continued to appear in various Sega collections after that, I believe.
Yeah. It's a console, of course.
It's on all of them.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Sega, what is it called? Sega collection on the PSP, PS2. There's the Sonic Ultimate Genesis collection that's on there as well. And the most recent one, Sega Genesis collection, it's on there too, obviously.
It's on the Switch now, of course.
Yes, it is.
There is.
Can I talk briefly? Sorry, John, if you're in the flow, I don't want to interrupt you.
Well, I want to finish up the port section.
By all means, I'm sorry.
Because there was also a mobile version for Java phones.
Well, that's got to be fantastic.
But before we go back, I want to quickly talk about some of the details on these.
Yeah.
Because this loops back around to a hack version that was released some years back. I can't remember. It was fairly recent, actually, now that I think about it. A reworked version of Golden Axe for 32X.
Oh, yes. Wow.
That's pretty recent, yeah.
That's very recent, actually. And that version takes the arcade backgrounds, among other things, and essentially transplants that into the game. So it feels like a fusion of the arcade game with a bit of the Genesis game as well.
Yeah, they've added in some of the missing animations and things. Like
it's awesome. It's a really good version. But it is missing one tiny detail that irks me to this day, and this goes back to the Genesis port. Yep. The Genesis port was really good for the time, but first of all, it's missing parallax scrolling. That's a pet peeve of mine, right? Most Genesis games have that, and for some reason, the port of Golden Axe 1 does not. So they took that out. Secondly, the Genesis version has much more garish colors. I think you guys could agree. Like, the arcade has a very soft look to it with, like, hues that I would almost describe as more what you would see on Super Nintendo later on.
Yeah.
Where the Genesis game is a bit garish.
I have to be honest, and maybe this is sacrilegious, but I kind of prefer that.
It's quite different, is all.
I feel like the Mega Drive version, the backgrounds and the sprites, as you mentioned on the Mega Drive version, they're not quite on a par with one another. Like, the backgrounds are significantly more advanced than the sprites are. Not that they're bad sprites. But with the Mega Drive, since you don't have that, I feel like it's more cohesive visually. And I like the detail of it, and I like the sort of slight darkness of it as well. It makes it feel grittier and more high fantasy. But that's just my personal take on it.
I can actually get on board with that, Stu. That's an interesting point. You're right, because the sprites actually do feel more connected to the backgrounds on the Genesis version in a way.
I mean, for me, the Mega Drive version is the formative one for me, because, like, just me sitting back, seeing that absolutely amazing title screen with the letters spinning around Absolutely. Coming to wrestling, that dun 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 dun. It's badass.
So and, the key,
yeah,
the key to the Genesis port, and the reason why it was very good for the time, is like it plays the part. It plays the arcade game. The content's there. It feels great to play. The drawback to the visuals are minor, and like and you said, Stu, it could be argued that they're better in some ways, right? Most of the other versions from that era, however, had serious technical issues. Whether it's Master System, Amiga, any of the other computers, they all run at a much lower frame rate. Like, we're talking 15, 20 FPS at most. Like, on Master System, for instance, I believe they used the background tile trick to do... Well, I was going to say sprites, but essentially one trick on the Master System is because you could... With the way tiles work in the Master System is you can flip them to face left or right, which is unusual because usually that was reserved for sprites only, but you could do it with tiles in the Master System. And so a lot of games would use background tiles to create characters. That's how you get like Mortal Kombat with the big looking characters on Master System and Game Gear. And I think that's what
Bosses and Dragons Trap.
Yeah. And I think that's what they've done here to make all the big sprites and have things on screen without a lot of flicker, so that they use background tiles, but they can't update the background tiles as smoothly or at the same rate as sprites. And so the whole game is very choppy.
Yeah. Although it's interesting that the character sprites in the Master System version are actually larger than they are in the Mega Drive one.
I think it's because of that, because they're not actually sprites at all. It's just with background tiles, they could do that. But as you see, they're like super choppy looking.
I mean,
and I think that version you can only play as Axe Battler, if I recall. Yes, is that right?
That's right. The most fundamental problem with that, and with many of the ports that, of course, the Mega Drive sidesteps, is no multiplayer. You know,
right.
Yeah. Who wants to play Gold? I mean, I want to play Golden Axe by myself, but like, you really want the option there to have the others in it. I mean, just Axe Battler. I mean, it's not Golden Axe if you can't play as at very least Gilius Thunderhead.
What you can do at least is you can choose the magic you want to equip before you start the game.
Yes, that's true. And I also want to shout out the title screen for the Master System version is actually quite badass as well.
That's
picture,
true.
The bronze picture of Axe Battler with flashing logo. It's very cool.
Now, I also, like, I'm confused by stuff like the Amiga and ST ports. Have you guys looked at those?
Yep.
Because you look at that and you're like, did they, like, I'm wondering if they practiced what we often heard about back then, where it's like they basically have an arcade machine and they're tasked with copying the game based on what they see, as opposed to like having source code access, right?
Yeah, like, that was, I think that was quite, I don't want to say common, but it wasn't unknown.
That's what it feels like to me. Like, these games both look weird. Like, the art is like vaguely Golden Axe, but everything is like distorted, especially the ST version, where you're just like, this doesn't look right. Like, how did they make this? Because it doesn't really look like Golden Axe anymore. Like, it kind of does, but like all the colors, the shapes, the way everything's designed, it's very strange.
The Amiga and ST is also fairly wretchedly slow. Like, the frame rate is okay, but the characters move too slowly. And it's
obviously the 8-bit micros, they're limited by what they are, and they're not too bad considering that. But I think the biggest disappointment for me was the PC Engine version. Just because the PC Engine is really capable of some strong color usage, and also some pretty complex background work. Like, that's where it excels. It was weak in terms of parallax scrolling, which isn't that important for this game. But in the end, this is just kind of an ugly version looking. It's an ugly looking version of Golden Axe with strange drab colors. The sprites look wrong. It doesn't feel smooth. Like, nothing about it feels good.
It's super bizarre when you compare it to things like Gradius 2 and Daimakamura. And like,
what I don't remember is this a Super CD-ROM or PC? Let me look at the packaging actually for this. I can't remember.
No.
And it was ported, I guess, by Nihon Telnet as well, so which they were hit or miss. But yes, this looks to be an original CD-ROM game because they introduced the Super CD-ROM format and then the arcade one later, both which added a lot of memory. And PC Engine could do a lot more with that. And
if I'm not that familiar with PC Engine. I didn't realize there was more than one CD format, so this is I'm learning today.
And if you look at, like, if you look at packages on your shelf, for instance, the original ones have like a green spine, which is just like the CD-ROM-ROM, and then you get the pinkish purple one for the Super CD-ROM-ROM. And those games all tend to be a lot more advanced in terms of what they're pushing, just because they have a lot more memory to work with. And yep, this being an older CD-ROM game, I guess that explains. Also, if it's like around, yeah, this was still early in the CD's life cycle, I'd say. So it's a bad version by a third-party company early in the system's life without the memory of the Super CD-ROM. So when you look at that, it does make more sense. But even still, I think they could have done better.
I want to mention, you've mentioned it very briefly in passing, but the Mega Drive version also added the dual, a secondary mode to the game, which was...
Right, yes.
Exactly. I used to find fascinating. What it essentially is just a linear... You're on the battlements of the castle, and you'll fight a series of enemies in order, and they get progressively more and more. It is cool. There's not a huge amount to it, but it is cool. And they also have, if memory serves, a fairly easy-to-access cheat mode by holding B and pressing Start, which will let you choose how many lives you have, how much health you have, etc., etc.
That's right.
So the Mega Drive, for me, kind of the definitive home port for me, even
absolutely,
over,
especially for the time.
It has a whole extended ending, like yes. You know, yeah. And normally in the arcade version, you get up to the final castle, the big doors open, Death Adder comes out, and you're like, oh, here's Death Adder. We knew he was coming, and you beat him. And you know, the king and queen or princess, whatever, come down, and you think it's over. But in the home version, it's like, no, please help us. And you go inside the castle, and there's a whole new level inside the castle with even more enemies. Obviously, they're the same enemies, but they're just, you know, there's more of them. And then you fight a second Death Adder, who I think is called Deathbringer, I believe.
Yep.
And I want to say, going back to your point about colors, I believe he's like purple and green. Like he's pretty gnarly looking.
Yeah. You're right.
And he can, I know he can... He can, like, use magic against you, and, like, he can, like, hit the ground and, like, shoot, like, little shockwaves at you. Like, he's very powerful.
Right. He can summon, like, the dragon, of course, with the magic.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
So, it's a really, you know, we talked about how well-paced the arcade version was, but I feel like by adding that one extra level and having one more fight, I feel like the Mega Drive Genesis version, I think, just goes over the edge. Like, okay, we know you think the game is over, but here's one more for you. And I think it's just super cool. I just think all around it works beautifully.
Dang, that's a good point.
And then, of course, they have to change the ending again because it's not an arcade version anymore.
Right.
So they have a different ending, which unfortunately is not as, it's not as cool as the arcade version, but it's kind of, they're basically playing baseball. It's kind of amusing.
I would have loved
you get
if they,
all the Eddie B names as well.
Oh yeah, that's true. I would have loved though if they did a recreation of that in like somebody's home or something. Like they're gathered around the TV playing the Genesis and the creatures bust in.
The Death Adder is just a bunch of snakes that become a bloke, isn't it? Like it's formed from
case, yeah.
Yeah, it's messed up, man.
And what's interesting about this, by the way, is all the versions you talked about right now are usually based on the arcade game. So they end after you fought Death Adder. The DOS version, however, is based on the Mega Drive game, which has this additional level in the end.
Yeah, the Deathbringer.
Although the DOS version is interesting because the visuals are actually closest to the arcade for that era.
It looks pretty good.
It's just really choppy.
Yeah.
I think it's literally like 15 frames per second, which, you know, there was a time, PC gamers, when the PC was not the place to play action games. The graphics were way too slow. It relied on bitmapped graphics. It couldn't do like the tile and sprite acceleration of consoles and arcade boards. So side-scrolling games like this were very slow on the PC, and this is definitely a case. But I think this is better than stuff like, if you remember, like, the Simpsons Arcade and other games like that also showed up on DOS.
Yeah.
And they look a lot worse than this. This actually does look like the arcade game. It just doesn't run smoothly.
Yeah, I mean the PC version, as you say, I mean, it's choppy in its animation. The frame rate's not bad.
It's not smooth. It's pretty low.
it's
way below 30 FPS.
What if you overclocked it?
The problem with a lot of these games on DOS, though, is that they were built around a specific clock speed, and so if you would speed up your PC, get like if I tried to play this on my Pentium 3 retro PC here, it would likely just run way too fast.
Yeah, yeah. I looked at a video of this one, because I haven't currently got a DOS sort of setup, and it does look too fast in everything that I've managed to find of it, so I wonder if nobody knows the true speed anymore of PC Golden Axe. Now, We've spent a lot of time, rightly so, on the original Golden Axe and its ports, but...
I'd like to maybe mention one or two more things, if that's okay.
Yeah, by all means. Please. Yeah, absolutely, okay. Yeah.
Because I think, again, the Mega Drive port is quite interesting, because, of course, there's a bit of stuff missing. There is one of the screams missing, because we didn't even mention that properly, because the enemy screams. Yes. One of them is taken from Conan, from the Battle on the Mount, and the other one is taken from First Blood. Mm-hmm. You know the Oh God scream? Oh, and one was removed on the Mega Drive version. It doesn't exist there, sadly.
That is a shame.
Quite a few people on this game also went on to make my beloved Phantasy Star 3 afterwards.
And I think if you look at the king of RPGs.
The king, absolutely. If you look at both of them, you can, I think, see certain stylistic similarities, at least. You can see they just came from Golden Axe. And there's all this weird stuff in the background. For example, when you're in the village... And you fight the two giants with the hammers a second time, the second bunch of them. There is this writing DEB on the at the door. Did you ever notice that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
So what's up with that? So my theory is it's supposed to say bet, but of course in Japanese it's read from right to left in that case.
Oh
so,
wow.
Yep, that's how they wrote it then. Then there's somewhere 4949 hidden. Then there is R&D number 1 somewhere. So they put a lot of weird stuff in there. It's fascinating.
So they're not like Easter eggs, like dev, like signing their work kind of business.
Yeah, I think so. There. Probably something like that. And of course, the ending, as mentioned, we have some credits here, and all of them are the weirdest pseudonyms you can think of.
Yeah.
Not one real name.
One, of course, that's the main event. I mean, it's still the most beloved, iconic Golden Axe game, but I'm thinking now we're definitely going to need a sequel to cover all of these sequels and follow-ups, but I think we should talk about the next Golden Axe game chronologically, because it's a bit of a departure, which was 1991's Golden Axe Warrior for the Sega Master System.
Uh-huh.
So
anyone
weird.
Out there familiar with this one? Would you like to know something very frustrating? I used to own this, and I sold it for not very much money, and now I wish I hadn't, because it is quite valuable.
Oh, well, Stu, I can relieve you there. I owned it as well. I still own it, but a friend of mine dropped it years ago, and the board is cracked.
Great. Nice going.
It doesn't work anymore.
Friendship ended permanently.
In this case, actually, yes. Not because of that, but because of the giant idiot.
Okay, fair enough. See, now I'm worried that being a giant idiot is a prerequisite to ending a friendship, because I feel like I may be doomed. I could end up alone at this rate. But
Stuart, don't worry about that. But I mean, you are not the kind of person who goes see Starship Troopers and then joins the army because this is why they make a man out of you.
I wasn't this planning kind of to do that next month or anything. Golden Axe Warrior is a Zelda, the original Legend of Zelda we're talking about here, a clone. And it is a clone. It is a blatant clone.
Yeah.
But it's really good, isn't it? It's actually really good. It's a lot of fun, and it kind of expands and builds on the original Zelda in some ways that will be reflected in the actual Zelda series.
The thing is, I think it is a more fun game, of course, because it's 5 years newer than Zelda, so...
Yeah.
Right. Standing on the shoulder of giants and everything.
Yeah.
Stu, let's
it's
be fair here,
looking.
Though.
I'm always impressed by how cute it looks.
Oh, it does. This is more of a Newtopia clone, if you will.
Oh, fine, it's a Newtopia clone. It's that thing you just said, it's a clone of that. No, I kid. Yeah. I mean, it has the sort of quasi, like, almost, I mean, it is top down, but it has that lovely sort of quasi-isometric look to it. It's got a very clean, very clean graphics.
Yeah. Just like Newtopia.
Just like Newtopia. Whenever, of course it's like Newtopia, how could I have forgotten Newtopia? But whenever I look at this game, I always find it remarkable just how impressive it does look and play.
It has beautiful colors, I think.
Yeah. It does. It's so clean. And I wonder why more people don't... Well, I guess the reason is because it's on the Master System. You know?
The Master System, 1991 in the Master System.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for Europe, that's nothing. That's like mid.
Yeah, not sure. Like,
for me, that's US, just though. Let's go. That's early years. I didn't even have a Master System at that point. But who has played this one?
I did. I bought it when it came out back in the day. And played it on my Mega Drive with the adapter.
That's a very cool way to play it.
I've played it but not finished.
I did finish it back in the day, and I had a great time with it.
Yeah, it's got like 10 dungeons, hasn't it? Like, you got 5 dungeons, and you can sort of... You don't unlock the other 5 until about you beat them, right? Yeah. It's got an interesting structure, and it's a really expansive, interesting game. Can I just say that in this game, Axe Battler, who you're ostensibly playing as, looks so much like the Dragon Quest guy, it's not even funny. Like, it's just him.
It sure does.
Yeah.
He's got a helmet now, so yeah, he looks much more like Dragon Quest guy than he looks like Axe Battler does in the Golden Axe, so yeah.
Something I found funny that I think Thomas added to the notes is the British really disliked it because it got like a 40 in Mean Machine. So when I saw that, I was like, no, he didn't. I'm sure that game reviewed well in Sega Pal, and I looked it up, and no, not really. They gave it like 68. Goodness knows what's going on over in Sega Pal.
I'll tell you this, Stu. My boss, Richard Ledbetter, used to write for Mean Machines back then, and he has it on record as to hating the Master System. He always says it's only the Master of Evil. So anything Master System related, I feel you can expect that Rich Ledbetter and anyone around him probably isn't going to like it very much.
More like Rich Led worse. How about that?
Yeah. The theory is that like they were all playing these cool import games all the time, and like new hardware was in the offices, and then they get tossed a Master System game and like nobody wanted to touch it, which is kind of not great. It's disgraceful for the Master System.
It's a disgrace, but I'm going to spread this and Mean Machine's reputation will be destroyed. It'll be in tatters. Now who's the yob?
That's my thought on that, perhaps. Though I'm not sure who actually reviewed it back then, but
no.
I think it was just people working at the magazines weren't really into the Master System anymore, and especially to them with access to bigger and better things, it just felt outdated and uninteresting, and they probably didn't necessarily give it a full chance, especially since it is sort of a Zelda 1 like experience. So it's, you know, it's a little more complex than that, but Zelda was years old at that point, right?
Yes, it was. I think because this is my forte, so you've got me interested in it now. I apologize, but I think with Sega magazines, for example, like UK Sega magazines, like Sega Power, which was initially just S, the Sega mag, and it only covered the Master System because that's all there was. I guess the enthusiasm was there to some extent, but something I find very funny is that the magazine Sega Force from initially Newsfield split off in 1993. And there was a dedicated Sega Master System magazine in 1993.
93?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
It only lasted about 6 issues, and it was about the size of a pamphlet. But what were they thinking? Full on Angry Video Game Nerd style, what were they thinking?
Oh, my God. Right. Did they have The Lion King on the cover? Like, what was even coming out for the Master System at that point?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Mortal Kombat.
Because the first issue is like Land of Illusion, and that's one of what I consider a very late Master System game. You know, it's crazy.
They could have just shifted to Game Gear then.
Yeah, they could have, but they didn't.
Just ship the whole thing down to South America, where the Master System would rule there for many more years, you know?
Translate it to Portuguese, and you're set.
Issue number 1, Sega Master Force, cover Robocop 3, oh dear. Mortal Kombat, cover 2, oh dear. Oh, yeah. Chuck Rock 2, Son of Chuck. Let's just stop this. There's no need for this.
Okay, I've come around. Chuck 2 is actually a great game on the Genesis, but... Master System version, not so much.
Not so much. I mean, it's okay, but yeah, Chuck 2 is great. That's why there's going to be a Chuck Rock episode at some point. Another one lined up. Caveman Games, it's happening. Golden Axe Warrior, though, very good, quite expensive now. Do give it a go. It's on the Sega Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection, I think. It's on there as one of the unlockable bonus games, which is very cool.
Is that cool.
The PS2 one? I think it's a PS2 one where it's on.
Oh, okay, is it? All right, I thought it was the 360 one. I could be completely mistaken, but it's definitely unlockable on one of those.
Yeah.
The one thing that really sticks out to me about this game, though, is just, like, it really shows how strong the color palette capabilities were of the Master System, because it's got a beautiful look to it. Like, Zelda looks very you know, of its time. It's very limited by the color palette of the NES and a lot of its weirdness, especially with things like yellows and greens, where they're just kind of not great, right? And this just looks so vibrant and colorful and just nice. It doesn't, I feel like the visuals here with just a little bit of work wouldn't have been out of place on the Genesis itself.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, it does look very close to some early Genesis games, I think.
Right?
I'll hold my hands up at this point. And as I said off mic earlier today, I will admit that the Spectrum is a bit shit. Like, I'm not going to pretend it's not. The Master System, though, you drag that from my cold, dead hands.
It's good. It's good.
That thing fucks, okay? I'm not having it.
I mean, you know what the German press said back in the day? This is the game that is a good reason to buy a Master System converter, because mm-hmm. there's nothing like it on the Mega Drive at this point.
They were
right. No Crusader of Senti just yet.
No Senti, no Lance Talker, nothing. If you want action-adventure stuff, that is the game you should play.
Yep.
And yeah, I agree. I had a great time with it. It's the second game
I've bought. Did you ever play this one, Diamond, by the way? Much of it?
No, I was not a Master System kid, so I played a fair number of Master System games, but yeah.
I mean, you and I, we grew up in the U.S., of course, so I also had no experience with this back in the day, right? Because, like, most people did not have a Master System.
Yeah, I mean, I saw my share. I had my share of Master System experiences, but certainly not in 1991, and definitely not this sort of, you know, not knockoff, but like, you know, like sort of Gaiden, Golden Axe Gaiden, if you will.
No. Yeah. I think one thing I want to shout out about this game that you haven't mentioned, and this is unbelievably specific, so I apologize. I think the use of fonts is very impressive. The text is extremely readable and pleasant to look at. Which gives it a classy look, almost like a PC adventure game or something. And I rate that, and I want it to be known that I like that font. Thank you.
And I want to add one more thing about it, because what's also remarkable about this game is it does have safe battery in there.
Yes, it must be one of the only Master System games that has that.
Yeah, I think there's probably a handful, and that's it. And I mean, to put in this work for a game, for a console that is dead in Japan, so late in its lifetime, with a battery and everything, from some obvious really good Sega people, it's amazing, I think, that they even did that.
Yeah. But what they also did later the same year, 1991, is they went, right, this Golden Axe has sold quite well, let's just do it again. So they did, and they created for the Mega Drive / Genesis Golden Axe 2, which dropped in late 91, early 92. And I think it's fair to say that it's very similar to the first game.
It really is just like, it's more golden. It's like, hey kids, you like Golden Axe? Here is more Golden Axe. I mean, to be fair, they didn't, it's not a quick like copy and paste job. They definitely put work into it. They made new sprites. You know, there was some thought here.
Yeah.
But it really is just a continuation of what Golden Axe was. And there's very little spice added to it. It's just like, you know, it's like, I think like Axe Battler, like, is wearing a little bit of armor now, and like Tyrus Flair, instead of a bikini, she's wearing like sort of like a onesie, but it's still like open.
Yes, but yet, I'm sorry, Diamond, this is important to me, very important. Yet, even though she's wearing more clothes, you can see more of her ass. They put more effort into drawing the ass, and I want that to be on record as saying that I appreciate that.
Thank God. And that I'll call up my censorship campaign then. Thank you,
Steve. Yes. This is another preview of my future episode, Arses in Video Games, which will be a 12-part masterpiece. Or should I say arsterpiece? Please cut this. Don't cut it. It's too good. Golden Axe 2, I want to be again on the record as saying I think this game is actually quite underappreciated as a result of the circumstances around its sort of existence, because it wasn't reviewed very well, because in the UK at least, Sega Power, for example, going like, hang on, why are we doing this again? This is exactly the same as the first game.
Yeah, but being the same over here as well.
Being the same as a good game is not a bad thing. I posit this now. I do go back to this quite frequently because I'm less familiar with it than the original Golden Axe, and I think it's pretty good. I think it's a pretty solid little brawler.
Yeah, I think when I played it again yesterday, and I think it has a bit more jank than the original Golden Axe. It just feels a bit less refined, maybe. But on the other hand, there's also a few nice improvements with a few, well, different moves at least. You have some nice enemy creatures, and I like how they rework the magic system so you can use it more tactically in this game, because the longer you hold your button, the more you charge it up and the more of your little bottles you use. So you can decide, do I want to go for the big one, for the big dragon, or do I want to hit the enemy again and again when I'm surrounded with a small blast? And of course, you also have to find out, where can I stand now to charge up my big attack without getting hit? So that makes it a bit more interesting.
Did you play this one, John?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's I kind of echo what you guys think, where it's just, it feels like more of the original, but I do think that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, and so this wouldn't have been released yet. Streets of Rage was also 91, but the jump from Streets of Rage to Streets of Rage 2 felt like a generational shift almost.
It really did, yeah.
Where this is more like a just, well, here's more Golden Axe that you know and love, with minimal improvements. I will say, though, I think the soundtrack is actually quite a bit better. Like, the tunes in the original are great, but they're really good. Like, that first, that opening level, you're just like, oh yeah, let's go, when you hear that track.
Both are fantastic.
I do like the music for this game, but I do also feel like at least half the tracks don't feel appropriate for the sort of fantasy action. I don't know.
I totally understand that.
You know what I mean?
The title track, especially.
I love the funkiness of it, but I absolutely understand what you mean.
But it's good. It's not, I'm not, you know,
right.
There's bad music on the system, there's good music on the system. It's definitely the good music. It just kind of like...
Yeah. It doesn't feel
putting
like
together
the theme.
Seems a little strange, you know?
Now, who is the composer for this one? Now, Fumi Hatta, I don't want to get it wrong, I'm sorry.
Hataya-san.
Yeah. Now, they did Sonic 3, right? Or at least some of Sonic 3.
No, Sonic CD.
Oh, Sonic CD, really?
Okay. Yeah, the Japanese and European Sonic CD soundtrack.
Because of course Sonic 3D was Michael Jackson, of course, I forgot.
Right.
But I feel like some of the music in this game does kind of sound a bit Sonic-y.
And we'll see that continue with 3 as well, but
yes. Yeah. I feel about something about this game visually that I noted was, when I went back to it like yesterday, the stuff that has kind of been adapted from the original game, visually, all looks very solid, but then when the new elements come in, it almost sometimes feel like someone else drew them and they don't quite gel as well.
Probably
whereas
did,
the first game, as I mentioned, the first game, completely cohesive. This game a little bit like, so there is a feel of slight bootlegness going on here, but it's still a good game, and I'd recommend it to pretty much anyone.
One little bonus factoid on this for those that picked up a 6-button controller for the system to play Street Fighter at a later date, they may have found that this game is not playable with the 6-button controller unless you hold the mode button at boot.
Wow.
Otherwise, the controls are completely broken.
You don't get any D-pad reactions.
That's
ridiculous. It also when I played
it again. I think it actually maps walking direction to face buttons instead, but not even correctly.
Is this like a recurring thing with Golden Axe and Sega controllers? Because if you have the analog controller for the Saturn plugged in for the Dual, it doesn't even boot.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it didn't boot, but yeah.
That is wild.
It's really weird.
I don't want to blow it up here, but I do have to issue a correction. So, in this game, they replaced the magic potions with magic books.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And I do think it's kind of funny, because now, instead of collecting little bottles, you got your warrior walking on the battlefield and just picking up book after book after book.
Yeah, huge hardback leather-bound tomes.
And also, and I think in a serious downgrade, they took out the little guys. The little guys are gone.
Right.
And they've been replaced by these sort of like these hooded, like, magicians or wizards.
Yeah, and they can actually fight back. What the hell?
Yeah, they do attack you. They projectile weapons. That's kind of new. But I'm just saying, like, kicking the little guys in Golden Axe is one of, like, the true joys of video gaming.
Mm.
And to be replaced by these sort of, like, I don't know, just uninteresting sacks in this game, I think is a real serious mistake. And I believe they knew it was a mistake, because if you look ahead, every subsequent Golden Axe game goes back to the little guys.
Mm.
So this is the only game. This is the only game they said
they knew about.
We're trying something else, and like, no, doesn't work. Go back.
Even the Duel has those guys.
The simple visceral joy of kicking something that's defenseless.
You gotta kick the little guys. They make the girls sound like. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So if we're more to say about Golden Axe 2, we can talk about
it. Oh, I have one more downgrade here, because yeah, the sound effects are a big downgrade, I think.
Oh, I agree.
Not as crunchy as original, and the screams are gone. It's just replaced with this weird sound when somebody dies, and I mean, if I'm...
Could you do that again, please? I really enjoyed that. Can I get that sound once more? I love it. Brilliant. Retronauts. Thank you.
Right. I will have to censor my game sometime, because I did all the sound effects myself. It's amazing.
Amazing.
But yeah, I think it's a downgrade, because, I mean, the screams are a big part of the charm of Golden Axe 1, and just having these weird vocalizations in there... Yeah, it's not the same. It just, something is missing.
The strangled death scream, like, aah! It's just part of the game. You need it in there. Violence, that's a big part of this. Huge amounts of violence. Can round off, because we're definitely going to have to split this, because there's a lot to say about the remaining games. But let's round off with something slightly unimportant, which is the next game, 1991/2, Game Gear Axe Battler: A Legend of Golden Axe. Now, if Golden Axe Warrior was inspired by the original The Legend of Zelda, this one seems very much inspired by Zelda 2: The Adventure of Link, everyone's favorite game in the series.
Yeah, you know, I wish this had come to Master System as well. Might have worked well there.
Maybe. I mean, I played this for the old Game Gear directory, which was my magnum opus, as everyone knows. And I don't hate it, but I do think it's got a lot of problems. When you get into an actual dungeon, I think it's quite enjoyable. It's like a sort of crappy version of Rastan, you know? And there's nothing... I mean, Rastan is so good that... I mean, especially the Master System Rastan, if you've played that, it's absolutely amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But,
it's great.
I enjoyed that in this respect, but... The overworld stuff is, I mean, it would be fun, but the battles, the random battles are so frequent that it's infuriating. Because the one-on-one combat in this game is just not that fun. And it's frustrating, because you'll lose health, and it's in ways that feel really kind of unfair. And since it's quite a resource-intensive, like resource management in terms of trying not to lose health, because that's the only way you're going to get anywhere. It's mostly, I guess I'd call it like ActRaiser, if ActRaiser's sim parts were not good at all, instead of amazing like they are now.
Interesting. I would say the Game Gear nature of it also makes that worse, because I feel like on Game Gear the screen is so zoomed in that it actually makes walking around the landscape annoying, because you're constantly getting in battles, but you also can't get a good sense of where you're at or where you're supposed to go.
I agree. I mean, yeah, as Thomas said, on the Master System, I think this would have been a lot more fun. It wouldn't have been great,
right?
But it would have been a lot more enjoyable. It's like how with many Game Gear games, the view is simply close up without accounting for screen space. I mean, let's look at Sonic 2 as the most prominent example of that, really.
Those last levels, man.
Yeah. They're hard enough on the Master System, to be honest. Yeah. But, yeah. Aspect, another game by Aspect here. As were every Game Gear game ever developed by Aspect. 90% of them.
Wow.
But it's not Aspect on full form. You know, they're very good when they're on form, I think. But this one, not so much. It's a bit of a stinker.
Yeah, it's a bit of 70% Aspect, maybe.
Would it be fair to call this arguably the worst Golden Axe game? Because I think it might be.
If we're not talking ports?
Yeah, we're not talking ports. I mean, Beast Rider.
Well,
there is that PS3...
Beast Rider, yeah. Thomas's favorite game ever.
Thomas likes it more than I do. But I haven't played... We'll get to that on the next episode.
It will be the next
Stuart,
episode, yeah.
Stuart, if I may, I did do some research on this, and a self-proclaimed Game Gear expert wrote for the Retronauts website, the sprites are a little small, but the hack and slash gameplay delivers. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, it delivers in the... It delivers in the... It's not. It's okay. When, like I said, when you get into the dungeons, that's kind of when it gets into the more hack and slash thing. And I do quite like that, because it's just essentially, It's essentially budget wrestling. It's essentially platforming and slashing, and it's quite enjoyable. Like, there's actual level design there. It's not just left to right, flat, plain like the random battles are. Incidentally, I also wrote about this in a Handheld History Volume 2 at quite length, some length, so please buy that and send me some money in the post, because I won't get any for it. That's a great way to wind this one up, isn't it? A plugging something and then asking people to send me money in an envelope in the post. Anyway, yes, this has been part one of Golden Axe, and there are many games left to go. Like, I say many, enough that there's plenty to talk about for another nice breezy episode like this one. We could have crammed them all in, but it wouldn't have been satisfying. It wouldn't have been satisfying. So let's do the usual thing now, where we talk about where we can enjoy one another's work on the internet. Diamond, where can we find you on the internet? Because you are a stranger to these parts, obviously.
Yes, I am a little bit out of place in this Euro heavy episode, but I couldn't stay away from Golden Axe. Anyway, obviously I'm a big part of Retronauts, but if you want to find me on the internet, just go to my website. My website is fightclub.me. That's F-E-I-T, that's my last name. C-L-U-B, like a weapon many of the creatures use in these Golden Axe games. .me. That's me. So fightclub.me. You can look up there. I'm also active on pretty much all forms of social media. So, you know, you can always look at me and see what I'm watching, or maybe where I've been over this weekend, you know?
I just want to note at this point, in the last few weeks, I got followed by Diamond on Twitter, and it was an honor. A badge of honor. And now I'm sure you regret that to an enormous extent now that you've seen all my tweets. So I'm very sorry.
It's not as alarming as when I friended you on Facebook, Stu. That
was worse.
That's very much danger zone, okay?
Yeah, I do talk about anuses on there a lot. John, where can we find you on the internet following that segue where I mentioned anuses? Sorry.
YouTube.com/Digital Foundry. We also post stuff sometimes on Eurogamer.net/Digital Foundry. You can find me over at Dark One X on that X place. I'm also on the Blue Skies. Among many other places. But yeah, I'm around. Check out DF Retro stuff, of course, if you're into retro gaming.
And if you're not, what are you doing? What are you doing here?
That's a good point.
Yeah, Thomas, how about you? Dear Thomas, lovely Thomas.
So, well, if you are looking for my work, you can, of course, go to Germany's stores and buy an issue of M Games, which is a print magazine about video games, around since 1994. So, shortly after the big times of Golden Axe. But, yep, so this is where you can read me. If you want to listen to me, you can, of course, always come by university in Nieburg and listen to me rambling about old games, game design, stuff like that in my various courses and lectures.
So M Games now, the longevity going on there is... what we need now is for Edge to die, and then you can bypass surpass Edge and become... The longest running there probably is a long running one that I don't know about, though. Does any games have like a vicious right? Do you guys have like a vicious rival magazine? Because I'd love to. I'd love to start a beef.
We used to in a way, but we outlived them all. So
ha! Now it's put just them in us. The ground.
Just us left. It's amazing.
Yeah, M for masterful. Thanks very much for listening. And if you like Retronauts, like, for example, this episode you've just listened to, or many of the other fine episodes presented by people who aren't me and don't talk about anuses, you will find the Retronauts Patreon is a very appealing prospect, because for a mere $5 a month, which is, let's face it, almost nothing in today's economy, you will be able to access not just every weekly episode a whole week early, thus putting you on the your finger on the pulse of retro gaming news and discussion, but also you will get Diamond Fight. Hello, Diamond. You will get Diamond's tremendous This Week in Retro columns, which are also recorded as podcasts, which are extremely good. And I'm not just saying that because of nepotism or professional courtesy. They are actually good. I mean, if they weren't, I would say so. Okay. I don't take prisoners here, but they're good. And you can also access two entire bonus episodes every month, isn't it? Like full-length episodes about such exciting topics as we did Super Metroid, for God's sake. You know?
Yep.
Everyone loves it. Everyone wants to see what we have to say about Super Metroid.
Final Fantasy VI recently. We covered a lot of stuff. I was in an episode where we Kevin Bunch and some other fighting game experts talked about the quote-unquote dark age of fighting games in the early 2000s, where there wasn't a lot of stuff going on. So
that was a great one. I really liked it.
Thank you.
And more to come. More where that came from. I look forward to that. So thank you very much.
And our Discord.
And oh yes, and you get to go on the Discord where I will routinely go on there and make appalling jokes that nobody laughs at. So another way to enjoy my terrible humor there. But also, there's a nice community there full of lovely people. And of course, this month in retro. How could I forget this month in Retronauts? The greatest romantic podcast of all time. starring Diamond Fight and myself. I almost also am on it, but then sometimes other people go on it when I'm not able to do it because I've got my hand stuck in a cow or something.
Were you doing romance? Are we doing romance there?
Yeah, I didn't want you to find out this way. I'm really sorry. I wasn't thinking. Right.
New connotation. Okay.
Yeah, connotations. I think it was someone else who described it as the bromance or something. I thought it was quite funny. Because it's so true, isn't it? But again, thank you for listening. Do join the Patreon. It's very good. And even if you're not on the Patreon, you know what? You're all right. And we'll be back with even more Golden Axe with many more exciting and obscure games to come.
Night.